श्रीमद् भजदंडे श्री भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्री प्रभुपाद की जय। श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरांगा। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So this morning we are reading from Canto 2, Chapter 8, Questions by King Parikshit, verse number 27.
सुत उवाच स उपामन्त्रितो राज्ञा कथायामिति सत्पते ब्रह्मारतोभिषां प्रीतो विष्णुरातेन संसदि। सुत उवाच स उपामन्त्रितो राज्ञा कथायामिति सत्पथे ब्रह्मारातोभिषं प्रीतो विष्णुरातेन संसदि।
प्लीज चैंट।
Word to word, Suta Vacha, Srila Suta Goswami said, Saha, he, Sukadev Goswami, Upamantrita, thus being inquired, Ragya, by the king, Kathayam, in the topics, Iti, thus, Satpate, of the highest truth, Brahma Rataha, Sukadev Goswami, Brisham, very much, Pritaha, pleased. Vishnu Ratena by Maharaj Parikshit. Sam Sadi in the meeting. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Suta Goswami said, thus Shukadev Goswami, being invited by Maharaj Parikshit to speak on topics of the Lord, of Lord Shri Krishna, with the devotees, was very much pleased. Purport. Srimad Bhagavatam can be legitimately discussed only among devotees of the Lord. As the Bhagavad Gita was authoritatively discussed between Lord Krishna and Arjuna, the Lord and the devotee respectively, similarly Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the postgraduate study of the Bhagavad Gita, can also be discussed between the scholars and devotees like Chutte Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit. Otherwise, the real taste of the nectar cannot be relished. Shukadev Goswami was pleased with Maharaj Parikshit because he was not at all tired of hearing the topics of the Lord and was more and more anxious to hear them on and on with interest. Foolish interpreters unnecessarily tackle the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam when they have no access to the subject matter. There is no use in non-devotees meddling with the two topmost Vedic literatures, and therefore Shankaracharya did not touch Srimad Bhagavatam for commentation. In his commentation on the Bhagavad Gita, Sripad Shankaracharya accepted Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But later on, he commented from the impersonalist view. But being conscious of his position, he did not comment on the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Shukadev Goswami was protected by Lord Krishna with Brahma Vibharta Purana, and therefore he is known as Brahma Rata. And Sriman Parikshit Maharaj was protected by Vishnu, and thus he is known as Vishnu Rata. As devotees of the Lord, they are always protected by the Lord. It is clear also in this connection that if Vishnu Rata should hear Srimad Bhagavatam from the Brahma Rata and no one else, because others misrepresent the transcendental knowledge and thus spoils one's valuable time. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Radha Shri Vasudeva Guru Bhakta Vrinda Vancha Kalpati Vrishya Kripa Sindhu Devcha Patitanam Pavane Guru Vaishnava Vrinda. In this chapter, we are seeing questions by Maharaj Parikshit. We are seeing that purport after purport, Prabhupada is talking about stressing the point about hearing from the right person, discussing amongst devotees, disciplic succession, speaking in parampara. Every purport, I was going through the purport, I'm like, wow, and here again, the same point is being repeated. When something is repeated, then it sticks. And so I thought that I will also continue with the same theme Prabhupada is saying in the purport about the importance of the speaker, the listener. However, I was thinking with a little different aspect I will discuss about repeating. What inspires us to repeat and what repeating may look like. So in order to do so, I thought, let's see how was Srila Prabhupada inspired to repeat the message. What inspired Srila Prabhupada? And in order to do that, I went to the Lilamrita, and the first meeting that Srila Prabhupada had with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. And so I'll read that. Sitting with his back very straight, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati appeared tall. He was slender, his arms were long, and his complexion was fair and golden. He wore round bifocals with simple frames. His nose was sharp, his forehead broad, and his expression was very scholarly, yet not at all timid. So there's further description about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. A clean white Brahminical thread was looped around his neck and draped across his chest. Abhaya and Narain, we know his friend, having both been raised in Vaishnava families, immediately offered prostrated obeisances at the sight of the revered sannyasi. While the two young men were still rising and preparing to sit, before any preliminary formalities of conversation had begun, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta immediately said to them, "You're educated men. Why don't you preach Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message throughout the whole world?" Abhay could hardly believe what he had just heard. They had not even exchanged views, yet this sadhu was telling them what they should do. Sitting face to face with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Abhay was gathering his wits and trying to gain a comprehensible impression. But this person had already told them to become preachers and go all over the world. Abhay was impressed, but he wasn't going to drop his intelligent skepticism. After all, there were assumptions in what the sadhu had said. Abhay had already announced himself by his dress to be a follower of Gandhi. So he was wearing cotton. That was the idea, that when you were a Gandhi follower, you believed in wearing anything that was cotton that was done by hand, as opposed to the Britishers coming in with their cloth. And so he showed that he was a follower of Gandhi. Then, just skipping a little bit, the Lilamrita further says, this sadhu, this is what Abhay noticed, this sadhu wasn't concocting his own philosophy, and he wasn't simply proud or belligerent, even though he spoke in a way that kicked out practically every other philosophy. He was speaking the eternal teachings of the Vedic literature and the sages, and Abhaya loved to hear it. So we see in this description that what Prabhupada noticed, what this young Abhaya noticed, that he was speaking from the Vedic scriptures and he was not concocting anything. And that's what had impressed him. He was repeating. Srila Prabhupada didn't come there to really get into all that, but he said, okay, let me go. The friend was telling him to come, and so he went. But he went there to show that I'm not your follower, so to speak. This is what I'm into. But Srila Prabhupada was impressed. He was impressed. And another thing that we can see that why Srila Prabhupada was inspired, not only that Bhaktisiddhanta wasn't concocting, but also he was inspired that Bhaktisiddhanta gave him an instruction right away. He gave him the instruction to repeat. He was repeating, Bhaktisiddhanta was repeating, and he told the same thing to Srila Prabhupada and Narain and whoever was there to repeat the instruction of Lord Chaitanya. So this is about Srila Prabhupada, but now I would like to read something from Mukunda Maharaj's diary, Miracle on 22nd Avenue. Is that what it is called? Miracle on? Yeah? Okay. So this is when Mukunda Maharaj, so I'll call Mukunda because that's who he was at that stage that I'm reading. Mukunda and Janaki, they were already initiated, and just recently initiated, and then they told Srila Prabhupada, they told the Swamiji, after getting initiated, that they want to go to India to discover, experience spirituality. So you could see there was no commitment. They got initiated, but there was no commitment on their part. Okay, now we got initiated. That's good, fun. We'll chant on these beads or whatever. But we're going to go to India. So they went and told the Swami then, that this is what Maharaj said. Janaki and I are going to India for a while, Swami. Oh, he opened his eyes wide. When will you leave? Not tomorrow, but the next day. So soon? Yes, Mukunda said. Will you fly from here? then response, no, we're going to head over to the west coast to Oregon, which is where I'm from, and then we'll go to India from there. And so Maharaj writes further things. He asks them, it's amazing. They ask Prabhupada, do you know anybody in Delhi or whatever? So Prabhupada actually gives him an address of a person. And he's writing down, you know, telling him the address, and Mukunda writes the address down, and the Swami tells everything, and then, do you have a phone number? And then gives them the phone number, etc. So it's very sweet conversation that goes on. And then it sounds like Mukunda was not too sure. There was a long pause, and he wasn't too sure how to say goodbye to him. You know how you kind of get in this situation, you're trying to say bye, but you know what to say. So then Mukunda says, California would be a good place for you to start a temple, I said at last. There's lots of interest in India and spirituality in that part of the country, especially in Los Angeles. There's lots of open-minded people there. And so, the Swami heard. And then finally he said, Mukunda said, Hare Krishna, and then he bowed down to the Swami. I bowed down on the floor before him as I had seen others do. I heard the Swami's voice behind me as I reached the door. And this is what he said, Mukunda, and I turned around, just see if you can start one center on the West Coast. It would be a very great service. I smiled and I gave a half a nod. Okay, I mumbled. I made my way back to our loft, wondering why the Swami had mentioned opening a center after all the goodbyes. When I mentioned opening a temple in California to the Swami, I had no intention of volunteering myself for the task. I only meant that I could really imagine a temple taking off there in the future. So you see something here, what's happening, same thing that happened with Srila Prabhupada, with Bhaktisiddhanta, yeah? Go and preach in the world, up Western world, and here in the West, the Swami is asked to go and open a temple. And that was not his thing. Further, so then Janaki and Mukunda, they go to, on their way to Oregon, they stop to see their friends, Dustin and Melody, that is Shamasundar and Malati, as we know. And so when they see him, naturally, they're telling there about the Swami. So they tell about the Swami, and they say to them, he says that there is a prediction in one of the ancient Indian scriptures that Krishna's name will be chanted all over the world. Dustin asked, what's this chanting all about? The Swami says, God and his name are the same. And then Janaki said, so that by chanting the names of God, you get direct access to him. And then they tell him that they got initiated and gave beads and etc. So then Mukunda says, the Swami's into changing the world the same way we are, because that was the hippie movement. They wanted to change the world. So he says, the same way we are. But his version is to change it spiritually. He told me that he used to be part of Gandhi's movement in India, you know, to try to get independence from England. But his spiritual master told him that Krishna consciousness transcends any material conditions. Wow, said Dustin, that's really exciting. Where did he come up with all this? Oh, no, Janaki said. The Swami hasn't come up with it himself. He is just repeating what his spiritual master told him. He's part of something he calls the disciplic succession. So the idea is that there's nothing made up, nothing new added. It's just one teacher repeating the words of his own teacher. And he's really, really knowledgeable. He's a real scholar who's written books and everything. you should hear him quote Sanskrit. And then Mukunda said, so it's not like a personality cult or something. The Swami is an amazing person, but he represents something older, you know, a whole culture and tradition of knowledge. He's in touch with the something sacred. So conversation continues. And then Dustin says, well, you know, I like to read some of his writings. And Mukunda says, I can loan you my books, not a problem. And then he says, Dustin says, you know, you guys are different. It looks like that you're naturally high. You know, without drugs, you're happy. I mean, that's what we are all after anyway, right? I mean, that's why we try to expand our consciousness, right? I want to try what you're doing, and I want to meet the Swami. And so Mukunda says, well, you could go to New York to see him, but he said that he'd like to start a temple on the West Coast. So you could go down and see him after that's open. Actually, he asked me if we could open one for him. And Dustin and Melody looked at each other. Really? He asked you to do that? And conversation goes on, and then he says, after some time, Dustin says to them, we're really interested in what you and Janaki were saying about the Swami. This is the next day. And the philosophy he is teaching. We're seekers, you know, and it sounds like you found the right thing. And Mukunda says, yes, he's really changed my wife, my and Janaki's life. And then Dustin says, this is what he says. He says, so we were thinking, why don't we all go to San Francisco and start that temple the Swami asked you to open? So as I was reading this, I was thinking, this is just coming out from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I was thinking how Lord Chaitanya went to South India and he would tell people to chant Hare Krishna, and then those people will tell people to chant Hare Krishna, and then those people would they would give the message that Lord Chaitanya gave. And this is what's happening here. They heard the Swami. They told Dustin and Melody that, hey, he's not concocting anything. He's repeating. They liked that. He didn't come up. Oh, wow, it's something so, it has a whole sacred star to it or whatever. So they were impressed by that. And then they wanted to repeat the same thing. They were anxious to open the temple. So this, I was thinking, is called repeating. This is what repeating looks like. We see that repetition is going on and it's still going on. It's still going on. And we see that in Chaitanya Charitamrita, repetition is going on. Now that's one part of repeating, how one gets inspired to repeat, because it is bona fide. And because of the people whom you're hearing from. Dustin and Melody heard from Mukunda and Janaki, and they saw what they were like. They were happy. They saw the change in that. They knew them before. They went to school together, etc. But now they were seeing that they're so happy and they're high in this philosophy and this chanting. So this is repetition. Then there's another aspect of repetition that I would like to present today. By the way, even Shukadev Goswami, okay, same with the same point here, Shukadev Goswami, he also repeated. And what inspired him to repeat? In his case, he got inspired to repeat the message is because he was questioned by Maharaj Parikshit. This chapter is known, question is titled Questions by King Parikshit. But even before this particular chapter, even before, the very first time that we heard Shukadev Goswami started speaking the Bhagavatam, it describes that he praises Maharaj Parikshit for his question. Variyan esham te prashna kripta loka hitam nripa. He was saying that how your questions, what you have questions, are actually for the benefit of the whole world. And so he's inspired to speak with the because of the questions that Maharaj Parikshit But another aspect that I wanted to discuss about repetition what repetition looks like. Not that what it does, but what repetition could be. In the first, in the first canto, in the first chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the third verse, it describes about Sukadeva Goswami, the first time you hear about repetition there. The famous verse, Nigama Kalpataru Galitam Phalam Shukamukhad Amrita Draba Samyutam Pibata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam Muhur Aho Rasika Bhuvi Bhavuka. O expert and thoughtful men, relish Srimad Bhagavatam, the mature fruit of the desire tree of Vedic literatures. It emanated from the lips of Sri Shukadeva Goswami. Therefore, this fruit has become even more tasteful, although its nectarian juice was already relishable for all, including liberated souls. So it's very interesting what it's describing here. We read these verses, but sometimes we can just sit down and pause and think what this verse is saying. This verse is saying that the Srimad Bhagavatam, which was spoken by Vyasadeva, was very relishable to everybody. But when Shukadeva Goswami spoke, it became more relishable. How could that be? That something you hear and then you repeat. If you're repeating it, it should be the same. But no. In this situation, we hear that it is more relishable. Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport, Srila Shukadeva Goswami, who is compared to the parrot, is not for his ability to recite the Bhagavatam exactly as he heard, not for his ability to recite the Bhagavatam exactly as he heard it from his learned father or his spiritual master, but for his ability to present the work in a manner that would appeal to all classes of men. So he repeated in such a way that it became sweeter. I was thinking, when Shukadeva Goswami spoke the Srimad Bhagavatam, Maharaj Parikshit heard it, and we also know that Maharaj Parikshit repeated it. Yes? And what was his repetition? What is that work that Maharaj Parikshit repeated?
He told his mother.
Yeah, and what is that work called?
Brihad
Bhagavatamrita. For those of you who have read the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, at least my initial bewilderment was, hey, how is this Bhagavatam? I mean, he just heard the Bhagavatam. I just read the Bhagavatam. That doesn't seem like it's the Bhagavatam. How is he repeating it? How is this a repetition of the Bhagavatam? But after having read it a few times, actually, because it's just so sweet, you realize that it is a Bhagavatam, but it's presented differently. And maybe is the essence of the Bhagavatam? Why is it presented the way he presented? Shukadeva Goswami, in his audience, those some of the thoughts came to my mind, that Shukadeva Goswami, when he was speaking, he had an audience of a good number of sages from all kinds of background. So, and it says that here, his ability to present the work in a manner that would appeal to all classes of men. So maybe that's why he spoke what he spoke. And Maharaj Parikshit spoke to his mother, who was already a great Vaishnavi. And so he spoke the essence to her in that manner, and that's why it comes out like the Bhagavatam comes like that. Those were some thoughts. But I had another question, which I will open up for discussion here. And so I will ask a question for you to repeat the Bhagavatam, your realizations today. My question to you is, Maharaj Shukadeva Goswami, this is written here in Srila Prabhupada's words, that his expression of the Bhagavatam, his repetition was sweeter than Vyasadeva's. Does that mean, although we do know that Vyasadeva, when he spoke, his father, Sukadev Goswami's father, spiritual teacher, spiritual master, when he spoke, it was relishable by all. But however it became sweeter, does that mean that it in any way it is putting down Vyasadeva? In any sense? Could you explain why? Deva Prasad, wait for the mic.
Well, what comes to mind is that when he's speaking it, they don't have access directly to Vyasadeva. They have access to Shrikadev Goswami. So he's the one presenting it. So, image in my head, I don't know how to articulate it, but the sweetness is the putting it in terms that audience can receive. So then it's being delivered in a way that is relevant to me, that I can appreciate. That makes it very sweet. It's the same knowledge. It's not different from Vyasadeva said, but I'm not in front of Vyasadeva. I don't have access to him. So now this Shukadeva is giving access to him through his realization and understanding of that message.
But why does it say sweeter as opposed to being more relevant? I mean, Shukadeva Goswami describes the parrot makes the fruit sweet when you...
Well, he's glorifying Vyasadeva in the process.
He's glorifying. Thank you. And thank you very much. And how is that Shukadev Goswami's presentation being sweeter than Vyasadeva's? How is that a glorification of Shukadev Goswami, of Vyasadeva? Any thoughts? Oh, learned audience here?
Srila Vyasadeva presented this Srimad Bhagavatam. Let us say it's like a song. Sukadeva is also a singer, but he may be a more melodious singer than Vyasadeva, but he's presenting the same song. But he's just, also within the Bhagavatam, it described Sukadeva's birth as being special, really. Just, there's some connotation with him on the parrot itself. I mean, like if you read deeper, and then the explanation is that a parrot, when it touches a mango, that mango becomes much sweeter.
Thank you.
You know, it becomes much sweeter.
My question...
So coming back to the point that Sukadev is presenting the Bhagavatam, but like in a more relishable way, you know. I mean, he has... maybe assimilated the subject more, he can present it in a better way. But that's not like taking away from Vyasadeva. It's just like...
Yeah, it's not taking away from... It's actually not only not taking away, but it's actually glorifying Vyasadeva. Yes, Raghavendra.
Yes, it doesn't... Sukadeva's speaking doesn't minimize Vyasadeva at all. It actually, because just like in regular life here, we see when we hear a disciple of a guru or a son of a god brother or god sister we know speaking the Bhagavatam, speaking or doing anything. That's very wonderful. The admiration goes to the parents.
Yes.
Or to the spiritual master.
Yes, yes.
Naturally.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much for that, bringing that point that yes, it may be sweeter, but it does not take away from the spiritual masters who has given that knowledge to them is actually glorifying them. Who doesn't want, what parent doesn't want their child to exceed
themselves. Any parent here would have any problem? Most of you are parents here. Anyone would have any problem if their child exceeded them? Not only that, you would not only not have a problem, but you would love it. You feel proud of that. Therefore, in one of the purpose, I don't remember, but I know in Dhruva Maharaj's pastime, Srila Prabhupada writes this, maybe one of you remember that, but something to the effect that he says that Bhakti Siddhanta said that if one of his disciples becomes a pure devotee, his mission will be complete. And then Prabhupada writes there, right after that, in a more humbling way, he said that if one of my disciples becomes a pure devotee and takes me back to Godhead, that would be my perfection. Something to that point that he says like that. But yes, that is something that is so important that we understand that no, it does not take away from the spiritual master by glorifying his disciple. Srila Prabhupada was able to, when he repeated Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's message, he was able to do something that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta wanted to do while he was living. So that is a glorification of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, that Srila Prabhupada was able to do what he did. And because Srila Prabhupada gives all the credit to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. In the same way, Srila Prabhupada's disciples and followers, when they do something that is amazing, that is a glorification of Srila Prabhupada. The fact that Tamal Krishna Maharaj was able to go to China and open center there, this is Srila Prabhupada's desire, he wanted that. But it wasn't done, as far as I know, while Srila Prabhupada was present, but the whole Eastern Asia was opened after Srila Prabhupada had left this planet. So that is all glorification of Srila Prabhupada. So that's what repeating can do. This is something that we can, as devotees, trying to repeat the Srimad Bhagavatam, that we can think, whether we're repeating amongst devotees, whether we're repeating in front of non-devotees, or whether we're doing it in the college campus areas, or whatever, or Harinam, that we can think that we can be a good follower by repeating that what we have heard and repeating in a more sweeter way, if possible. In that way, we can glorify our spiritual masters, our disciplic succession. In that way, we can please Lord Krishna and his devotees. Anyway, these are some thoughts in regards to repeating the message that we hear. Is there any questions or comments in regards to this topic? Yes, sir, we're comfortable.
When we're repeating the geography of the Bhagavatam pertaining to the earth and the universe and stuff, sometimes it seems to be conflicting with what's been established in modern days, you know, and sometimes there's some apparent conflict there, really. And so Prabhupada had wanted some of his disciples to solve this kind of contradiction, you know. So sometimes for some speaker, that may seem contradicting, really. But in essence, it's, you know, it's trying to bring Bhagavatam in perspective, or bring, you know, whatever finding is out there in perspective, really. And it's, you know, we should not think that it's a deviation from the Bhagavatam.
Yes, there's so many contradictory statements in so many different ways, and some we can't really solve all of them. Sometimes we just have to repeat. Even while I was doing this research for this class, I saw described that when Shukadeva Goswami entered the assembly of all the sages, one place Srila Prabhupada writes that everybody got up to respect Sukadeva Goswami, but Narada Muni and Vyasadeva didn't, because that was a proper etiquette. They're the seniors, the father and the spiritual father and grandfather. And he makes that point there. But then another place, he writes that that even Vyasadeva and Narada Muni got up when Sukadeva Goswami came. So yes, there are conflicts, and we always appreciate all of them, no matter what it is. If these are, you know, things that we can't understand. Actually, it just reminds me of one thing that just recently happened, talking about how logic can sometimes don't really work in Krishna consciousness. But just giving you a little thing that happened while my grandson Krishna Charan was here. He's 4 years old. And so I was reading to him a pastime in Hindi, trying to help him understand Hindi. And so he wasn't able to understand. The Hindi was very too much like Sanskrit. So I was explaining to him in English. So I said, this is what this is saying. Devaki's eighth son killed Kamsa. So then I was telling him in English. So then I asked him, so who was Devaki's eighth son? He said, I don't know. So I again asked him, Devaki's eighth son killed Kamsa. So who is eighth son? I don't know. So then I said, okay, who killed Kamsa? Krishna. I said, okay, good. So we got somewhere. Then I said, so Devaki's eighth son killed Kamsa, and we know Krishna killed Kamsa. He said, yes. I said, so who is Devaki's eighth son? I don't know. Then I said, okay. So then I said, so who's Krishna's mother? Yashoda. So he said, Yashoda. I mean, he was like, who's Devaki? It didn't make sense to him. And I can understand. I like, wow, you got the essence. That's right. Devaki's eighth son, whoever that is, but Krishna's mother is Yashoda, and she's not. So this, what I'm saying is, sometimes Srimad Bhagavatam is beyond logic, because this is not logic. When he said Yashoda, isn't that the right answer? Yeah. Would all of you agree that that's the right answer? Yeah. And if he had given Devaki, maybe that was not the right answer? Or maybe that was the right answer too, but he definitely had the right answer. And so this is how Krishna consciousness is. It's logic, but not real logic. We have to go beyond logic to appreciate the Srimad Bhagavatam. Anyway, thank you everybody for your kind attention. Hare Krishna.